Hey guys, how's it going? Professor Herp here. Hope you're doing well. And we have another guest on today. I think we're just going to keep having on guests and talking to them and having cool conversations about their experiences and what's kind of made them in the hobby so far. And today we have on another Adam, runs Uncharted Wild. It's always so confusing because for some reason, you and Wickens are always in my live streams at the same time. And I know I can't just say Adam, because then it confuses probably both of you. But yeah, that's the struggle I deal with, I guess, during my live streams. But anyway, this Adam runs Uncharted Wild, reptile education business, and I guess the greater New York area, or is it more upstate, would you say?
Yeah, I do upstate New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut. I do
online
New England and online.
Currently.
Yep.
Currently. So, do you have an official website, or do you run out of your Facebook?
I just run out of my Facebook page.
Okay. So if you're intrigued by Adam's services, definitely check out his Facebook page. I'm sure you could just Google Uncharted Wild. But he has got a really cool education business going on, and I hope to kind of, when things go back to normal, check out one of his one of the things he does if there's a public venue or something. But today I thought today we could kind of talk about Adam's experiences in college, getting a zoology degree and his thoughts about that. He also spent, I think you said, 3 months in Australia working at their national zoo, which is really, really cool and something I'm really always been jealous of. So I think those two we'll talk about. And then if we have a little bit of time, we'll talk a little bit about the getting into the education business and stuff like that. So I think the first thing that I believe a while ago, we kind of talked about your zoology degree a little bit. And I remember you saying negatives around, a zoology degree. I don't know exactly how to put it, but like, I guess number one, for someone who wants to work with animals, someone who wants to kind of take that route, would you recommend a zoology degree? Would you recommend something else? And number two, is there any kind of weaknesses you feel like getting a zoology degree? Is there something else you wish you kind of course, animal related, but and I'm not exactly 100% sure what the options all are. But if there was something else you kind of wish you focused on more so, or do you think this got you, you're in this, you have this business going and everything, this got you to where you want it to be? What are your thoughts on kind of those two things?
Zoology degree, it's really tricky because it depends on what you want to do with animals. If you want to do like zoological research, scientific research, like field conservation, stuff like that, then a zoology degree is going to basically be essential. Now, when I went to college, originally I wanted to be a zookeeper. So I was like, oh, zoology, like this will be cool. But I mean, with zoos, if you're trying to work in the animal, like the work field, like zoo educator, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Basically, they just look at your resume. They'll be like, okay, you graduated with a 4-year degree. They toss that aside and then they look at your actual experience. So you could have a 4-year degree in zoology, biology, ecology. I had a friend that we were both in the zoology major, but mm-hmm. Being in zoology, we had to take physics and chemistry, biochemistry, like microbiology, all these really hard classes.
Yeah.
She didn't want to do it anymore. So she switched majors to anthropology, which was loads easier, didn't have to do any of the advanced science classes. Mm-hmm. And then she ended up working at Disney's Animal Kingdom for 3 years. So
I was really working with the animals.
Yeah. She was working in the African or Indian section, I think. But
okay.
Yeah, so if you're working to be a zookeeper, then a zoology degree, I don't think is 100% essential, because I had a friend that went to community college and he took herpetology and ornithology and stuff too. Now, being in a zoology major, you get professors actually doing that research and stuff like that. Whereas my friend at the community college, they had the same professor teaching ornithology and herpetology, and they were just kind of like a science ecology type person. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it did help because I did get more targeted things, I guess you could say. My ornithology professor had connections, so we actually got to do like field research and stuff. We got to actually do like dissections on different types of birds. We got to do like one on a red-tailed hawk and owls and things. So there definitely were advantages to it, but the vast majority of my college experience, a lot of my classes, it just felt like were kind of a waste outside of like the animal ones, like having to take all the chemistries and math classes and all this stuff. And there, when I went to Australia, the other person that was at the same internship as me, she lived in Florida, and there's what's called basically teaching zoos. I don't know if you've ever seen like the TV show Scrubs.
Not for a while, but
in the final season of Scrubs, and this is a very obscure reference, but in the final season of Scrubs, they basically changed the hospital to be like a teaching hospital. And here in the United States, we have two zoos that are basically teaching zoos. They are zoos that people can go and visit, to my knowledge, but they're run, they have like a full-time staff, but it's mostly run by people in these programs, like going up through the years and getting experience. So that's what she did. So she was much better prepared for like zoo work and all that stuff than I was through my education. And that's why, I mean, I enjoyed like my herpetology class and stuff like that. I got to learn like clades and all this other stuff. But in my free time, I just spent a lot of time volunteering and interning at different zoos up in like the northern New York area. And that's, I had an old boss. I was at an internship for like almost 2.5 years or something. And he basically did what I did. He was just further along, had more animals and stuff. So I was basically kind of like, I guess you could say, his apprentice. And it got to the point where at the end of that, I was doing shows that he couldn't do because he had kids and stuff. And that's kind of what really sparked me wanting to do this. So I went into college wanting to be a zookeeper. And then through my education, like zoo experience, I kind of more honed what I wanted to do, which if I didn't go to college for zoology, I don't think I would have figured that out. College with animal stuff is just so hard because almost everyone that I graduated with, none of them have animal related jobs. Some of them went into teaching and stuff like that too, but the vast majority of the people that I went into zoology with don't work with animals at all. They didn't get a zoo job because it's a very competitive thing. And every year they're churning out all of these zoo majors, but there's like only a finite amount of zoos. And if you're trying to do field research, like it's really just a game of, you have to know the right people. And so if you're going to go for a zoo major, you really have to like have a kind of clear guideline of what you want to do and where you're going with it. Cause sometimes it might just feel like you're wasting your time, and other times you graduate and you might graduate with all this knowledge and stuff, but there's really nowhere to go with it.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely hear you. I think that's something you've mentioned in the past too, when we've talked about the competitiveness of the degree and, you know, zoos having, you know, limited space and availability for people. I don't know. I mean, I'll just hear what you have to, I guess, kind of say about this, but I feel like for people that want to work with animals, and I mean, these are kind of two different ways. The most popular I hear in terms of college degrees is either zoology or going into biology. Now, what would your recommendation or thinking be like if someone was thinking, should I do zoology or should I do biology?
Well, zoology is definitely much rarer. Like the college I went to is the only college in the whole Northeast that actually offers a zoology major. So if you're like dead set on like, I want to do field research, I want to like do say shark conservation or something like that, then I would say seek out like a zoology program. But if you're looking to kind of be either maybe just an educator, like a biology teacher or an ecology teacher, or you want to work at a zoo and stuff like that, I would say a biology degree would probably be good. Granted, I didn't take a straight up biology major, so I can't really tell you the differences. And it probably varies college to college, I imagine, because like some colleges might not be able to offer like a herpetology class or something like that. But if you're looking for like just working at a zoo, as long as it's somewhat animal related, to like from all the zoo experience I have, at least they don't really care exactly what major. If it's a zoology major, a biology major, they don't care. They're looking at your animal experience. And that's even what it comes down to with field conservation. Field conservation, they do more care about what your major is, but they also care have you been able to assist like field experience? Do you know like the kind of procedures and stuff for like hypothesis and setting up and all this stuff? Mm-hmm. I mean, stuff you definitely know about.
Yeah.
But it's like when you have it, it's field research. So it's like at like one, my mammalogy class, we did trapping. So we had like, we installed bat nets and stuff like that.
Okay.
And we to like when the bats and the stuff would get caught, and we would kind of hold on to them. We would check for symptoms of what's called white fungus disease, which is like killing a lot of bats and things like that. We would take mm-hmm. measurements and stuff and tag them. So it's like you have experience like that going through college, that'll help you more. So I mean, the degree is kind of like the stepping stone. It's what really yeah. matters is how much you kind of push yourself to do stuff outside of college to get that experience.
So basically, it's kind of what you make of your college, I don't know, 10-year degree, whatever.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, and I kind of think that it kind of applies to everything. It's just yeah. with animal stuff. It's like if you're going for teaching, like there's a lot of colleges, there's a lot of schools and everything. But if you're going for zoos, like, yeah, there's a finite amount of zoos and field research. There's so little of it, especially with like the recent years with like funding and a lot of cuts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just, yeah, it's just such a hard thing to get into.
So when did you, I guess, I believe you were kind of hinting that during college, you found your direction towards doing the business you're doing now.
Yeah.
Yep. Is that like your ideal, like this is what you wanted to do? You wouldn't kind of want to be in any other path?
Yeah, I've been wanting to do this literally since I was like 5 or 6 years mm-hmm. old. When I was a little kid, I'd be like doing fake animal shows in front of my family with like plush animals, and my brother would be like my assistant and run to the back room and get out the new animal yeah. like they did on like late night shows. So I've literally wanted to do animal education since I was a kid. But when I went into college, I guess I just thought zoos would be the easiest way, but then mm-hmm. like watching my old boss, and I talked to some other kind of self-employed animal educators, it just seemed like it was the better way to kind of do it myself, be my own boss, do that kind of thing. I mean, I had like the right kind of skill set. I think I'm really good at public speaking. I'm very comfortable talking in front of crowds of like mm-hmm. 500 people. I know what I'm doing with the animals. I know my stuff. So it just, with my skill set and my drive and everything, it just seemed like the better route. So instead of, and with obviously, because if you're trying to get into animal education specifically in a zoo, that's even harder to get into than just being an educator, mm-hmm. just because there's very little of that. And some zoos don't even have that program. So I just figured rather than working at a zoo, making barely above minimum wage, I could be my own boss, get my own animals, set my yeah. own stuff.
And there's about being your own boss, I feel like, you know,
yeah,
flexibility. Yeah, I mean,
because like the zoos I work at, if you wanted to even introduce a new enrichment item to say the rhinos or something, mm-hmm. you would have to like fill out a form, and that would have to go through higher ups and stuff like that, which I mean, it makes sense so that keepers aren't just throwing whatever in with the animals, but mm-hmm. it's so excessive. Like if I had to fill out like a form to be like, okay, I want to put a new enrichment item in with my chinchillas, like it just it's so much easier to be like, oh, this is a cool thing off Amazon, here you go, chinchillas, like
yeah,
like that's one small part of it. But yeah, it's just being your own boss, especially, it's just, this is a very nice feeling.
Yeah, I can hear you on that. So that's cool though, you came out doing what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that's nice to hear. So is there any, I guess, overall with the zoology degree, I mean, it does definitely seem like you have to have the right experiences, or coming out as the degree, it's going to be really hard to, you know, convince an employer if you don't really have much experience behind you. But is there any other, I guess, like strong weaknesses you feel like in getting a zoology degree, something you wish was like a little bit different, maybe in terms of like class structure that you did, or I don't know, just something around it that you wish might be a little, that you wish would have been changed or done differently?
Well, a starter, student loans cheaper. But yeah, the class is so weird, because the classes that I took that I loved, like mammalogy, herpetology, ornithology, those were zoology electives. Mm-hmm. You could choose which ones you wanted to take, which I mean, I guess makes sense, because if you aren't interested in birds, you don't want to be forced to take an ornithology class. But the required ones were like the biochemistry, physics, I had to take calculus. Like those were the required ones. I was required to take a world's what was it called? Like a world history class. So I took a class on like feudal Japan or something. So it's like the ones that I did not want to take and were not interested in and took up the most amount of time and effort on my part were the required ones. And the ones that I looked forward to were my one or two electives a year that I got to take third and fourth year. So it's like the whole, and this is like my problem with a lot of college majors, is like they kind of like load it with a lot of fluff, like, oh, you have to take your gen eds and stuff in the early years and stuff. And it's like,
yeah.
They market college as being like the like they're like high school, you have to take these classes to get to college. College is where you get to do what you want to do. But even then, you're not taking a lot of classes you want to do until third and fourth year. And then, I can only speak for my college and my experience. I don't know how it is at other ones, but it's like the ones I wanted to take were just electives. And if they got filled up or if they were offered at the time that I had a mandatory class, then I was just kind of SOL. So it's just the class structure. And I think this is more just a fault of like the college system in America, but it's just the class structure, the ones that people wanted to take. Like I had friends that couldn't even take herpetology because the time it was offered and stuff. It's very unfortunate. And it's cool because like where we were, my college actually had a field research station up in the woods on a lake. So like we got to go and do field research and like go on herping trips and stuff and catch northern water snakes and like record the number of osprey and stuff we saw in the area and things like that. And it's like, those were the memories that I have. I don't remember any of all my grinding to get an A in microbiology.
Yeah, I feel it pretty strongly what you're saying. Yeah,
I'm sure you do.
I don't know. I kind of felt the same way about high school. I thought high school is when I kind of get all that, you know, everywhere type of stuff, English, just random subjects out of the way.
Yeah.
And then when you got to college, that was supposed to be where you kind of really started to concentrate on a certain particular subject. I mean, how many times do you need to retake the same courses? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of the courses I took that were just general courses in the first 2 years were courses I took in high school already. And they were just restating pretty much most of the same stuff.
Yep. And meanwhile, they're milking you for a lot more than you went to high school for.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. But that's a totally different conversation that I feel like could be its own episode. So, that seems just like general struggles of kind of the current system and stuff. But it seems like at least the college you went to had a pretty strong program in zoology and had a lot of extra offerings that they could give to, I mean, other than forcing you to do some classes you didn't want to do. You had some, you know, being that zoology probably isn't the most focused upon degree from people who, you know, presidents of universities and stuff. I mean, I feel like a lot of colleges and universities probably wouldn't concentrate unless they had a lot of funding on like, you know, having those things like what you're saying they had at a lake and stuff like that. So it's cool that you had those sort of opportunities there.
Yeah. And I mean, like my herpetology professor actually was doing field research on chytrid fungus and its spread, which is a disease that's like running rampant and killing amphibian populations across the planet. My ornithology professor, he did research on waterfowl. So like they would do duck bandings and stuff. Like I was very fortunate that really just about all of my professors, my insect professor, she was actually doing studies on parasitoid wasps. So like all my professors were actually doing, and that was, I think, a requirement of the school, is if you're going to teach the stuff, you have to actually be doing active research for it. And this was just a SUNY school. This was a state college. And I know what some of my volunteers that help me out with my animals now, they go to a different kind of more local SUNY school. And the person teaching herpetology is the ornithology professor. And he knows almost nothing about reptiles, apparently. So it's like I got very fortunate because my professors actually like knew their stuff. We got to do like accurate field research and studies and like go on herping and birding trips and stuff like that. Whereas, again, it could vary just college to college. So, I got pretty lucky with that.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. Definitely kind of like wish I could go back 10 years now and check out some SUNY schools. But So you went through college, you got your degree. Was it right out of college that you just started going? I mean, it sounded like even in college, you kind of started towards doing your business a little bit.
Yeah, so I started actually accruing animals my senior year, and mm-hmm. I literally got back because I went to Australia. I went to Australia that summer going into my senior year, and I got back from Australia, and 2 days later, I went and picked up Norman, my tagu, off Craigslist. Yeah. I was talking to the person off Craigslist because, like, when I was in Australia, that's when I really decided, like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be my own boss. So, like, my last month in Australia, I was surfing Craigslist because I'm in Australia. I'm like a continent. I'm like a world away, but I'm looking on like the local upstate New York and Massachusetts Craigslist for reptiles. So I got back and I picked up like three reptiles right in a row. And then I kept them at my work that I was interning at that was near the college. So I had Norman, my tagu, and some of my other animals that I still have downstairs. And I started using my own animals in my programs under my boss. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so by the end of my time there, I was doing shows that he missed and stuff. And yeah, literally, what did within a month of graduating, I filed the paperwork with New York State, paid the fees and everything, did the articles and stuff to get my own business. And then my first show was almost 2 months to the day after leaving college.
Okay, that's awesome. That's good stuff. I mean, no, usually people who become their own boss, that's like something they kind of dream of and work towards, and they eventually get there when they're like 40 or something. You know what I mean? You never really feel like it's a rarity being able to just kind of walk out of college and do like your own business and be able to, you know, succeed at it. You know what I mean? So
I had a retail job. I was a manager at a pet store for a few years mm-hmm. while I was still building it up. So I still had to deal with my my hassle of an old boss. So I mean, it wasn't like the perfect world, but I made it work.
it was a dream. That's what we're telling people. But still, you know, I feel like that's something I'd much rather do that. I mean, especially if you're saying alternatives are working barely, you know, above minimum wage at some zoos and being already super competitive. It's like, you know, it's not like you're missing like getting a salary of like $500,000 a year or something. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know. I think it was an overall kind of a smart thing. And I think the cool thing is, it seems like you made a lot of, I don't know. You kind of went the extra mile a little bit during your college degree and stuff, and really kind of did more than I would say the average student. I mean, being me who, you know, I'm grad school, I work around a lot of undergrads, and being in undergrad myself, like, you know, you always see the student who just does enough and the students who do way more, and then the students who do way more usually have their, you know, have their stuff together a little bit and can kind of go that extra mile and get kind of a more ideal situation for themselves.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you were a better student than me. I was not the best student, but I definitely put in a lot of effort outside of that.
I was not a good student until sophomore year of college. That's kind of when I started taking stuff seriously. I remember,
I think that's when everyone does, honestly.
I remember, what was it? There's this professor at my undergrad, and I'm like really kind of closer to him now, but I had him for a class the latter half of freshman year, the spring semester. And I remember like in junior year or something, when I was like super serious about like what I was doing, I was like one-on-one with him, and he was like, I remember having you in like freshman year and thinking that like you're just going nowhere. And I was like, and he's like, I'm happy I was wrong. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks. Cool stuff.
Jeez, so, that is a gut punch. Wow.
You must have felt super comfortable with me at that point. Yeah. So.
Hey, I thought you were going to be a failure for the rest of life. Thanks for showing me wrong.
So, yeah. So, you know, good stuff there, I guess. But
that is the teaching method.
What's it called? So then Australia, you said going, I guess that was your summer after junior year, you said, going into your senior year. First of all, so like, what was this whole, it was an internship. It seemed like something you had to just apply for externally from your college, or was it through your college?
The college was not related at all. It was like an international internship program. It's called Global Links.
Okay.
And basically, they just send a bunch of people. So there was like 80 of us that went to Australia because we had like a week orientation all together. And then we split up, and we were all different backgrounds. There was people, one guy I talked to was going to Sydney to work on a dating app. One girl that I'm still
feeling. So it wasn't even all.
Yeah, animal. It wasn't all animal. Oh, okay. There was like 80 of us. There was one girl that was going that I talked to and I'm still Facebook friends with. She was going to do physical therapy. She was training under the physical therapist for one of Australia's top rugby teams.
Interesting.
So there was, I think there was six of us. There was six of us total that were animal majors. Four of them went to like a smaller zoo that basically just did like Australian native animals. And mm-hmm. then me. And then the girl that I told you about that was at the college, the teaching college zoo, we both went to the National Zoo.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was that just like luck, or were they like, you are our dream student, our dream intern, we're going to send you to the National Zoo?
Well, we sent in like applications and stuff with our zoo experience and stuff. So mm-hmm. like, that's what I was saying earlier, like the, like zoos will look at your resume and see how much experience. So the internship people, they've been doing this for years and they do this, not even just Australia, Africa, Europe, all this stuff. So they gauged like our experience, mm-hmm. the people that they sent to the smaller zoo, they're relatively recent. Whereas, the girl Katie and I both had like more animal zoo experience, so they mm-hmm. were like, okay, we have a relationship with this college, because they'd been sending intern people to this zoo for like the last 5 years. So like the mm-hmm. zoo was very used to, hey, every summer the American kids come over basically. So the zoo was very familiar, so they had the relationship with that, so they sent us both there.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, first of all, that, and I mean, you feel free to toot your own horn here, because that's basically what I'm getting at. But this seems like kind of like an amazing opportunity type of thing. Like, this had to be like a competitive type of internship that a lot of people signed up for, no?
I honestly don't know. Because because basically from when this is like 8 years ago now, but from when we filled out the application, we sent it in, we had to be approved for the internship, but I don't know what the approval like decline process was. Mm-hmm. I know they only had allowed so many people to go to Australia.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many other animal people were there. Cause when I was there, of the 80 of us, I think like 30 to 40 were just tech people. Mm-hmm. Most of them were going to like Sydney, Melbourne, like the major cities, and working on like apps and things like that. So mm-hmm. I don't know how many people they turned away for animal stuff. But yeah, when I got approved and then I found out I was going to the National Zoo, I was on like cloud nine.
Yeah, I mean, like that almost equates to when I got my first like PhD acceptance. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, I didn't even think I was going to get accepted anywhere. And then like, I got like a letter like 2 weeks after saying like, I got like, I don't know, like a, what was it? All fees covered. So I didn't have to pay anything for my degree. Oh, and it was just like, it was amazing. And I was like, there's no way this is true. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
But that kind of sounds like one of those situations where, I mean, like, I don't know, like what more of an ideal zoo, and correct me if, you know, I don't know much about like some of the best zoos around the world, but I feel like Australia's National Zoo, that's a big time zoo.
I mean, it's a pretty big one. A lot of people confuse it with like the Steve Irwin Zoo, which is the mm-hmm. Australia Zoo. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah, it is one of Australia's like biggest zoos. But Australia is weird. It's kind of like New York for a lot of like people abroad, because like everyone assumes New York City is the capital of New York, but it's actually Albany. Australia, everyone assumes Sydney is the capital, but it's actually Canberra. So mm-hmm. I was like living in Canberra, which is kind of like isolated. It's like 2.5 hours away from Sydney and stuff. So it's mm-hmm. it is a big zoo, but it's not like nearly as populated or as like traveled as like the Australia Zoo from Steve Irwin. Okay. But yeah, so I mean, it was definitely, they had like an aquarium attached to it with like sharks and stuff. So it was definitely like way more than I thought I was signing on for.
Yeah. So did you focus, I mean, I'm guessing, and from the stories you told me, like, did you focus on reptiles there, or did you do a little bit of other stuff?
So basically, we didn't choose. They rotated us through each day. So basically, each day we would be doing a different unit. So there was the aquarium reptiles unit. There was the native section. There was big cats. There was hoof stock, things like that. So we just kind of rotated through. And then on my off days, I would take a bus an hour and a half away. Well, it's an hour and a half bus ride, but I took a bus. I was on the bus like 3 hours a day to go to volunteer at the National Reptile Zoo, which was like half an hour from the zoo that I was interning at. So I was interning.
How does that add up with that long of a bus ride?
Just because the bus stops so much, because it's a pretty big city. So I was on the bus for like almost an hour and a half.
That stinks.
I couldn't drive there. And I was stayed with a host family and like they worked and stuff, so they weren't gonna like drive me every day on my off day. So yeah, it was like a an hour and a half bus ride each way, which I mean I didn't mind. I just like listened to music and stuff, and it was worth it to work with cool reptiles. So yeah, so during my off days, I would basically be working with cool Australian reptiles, and then like during my work days, I'd be working with like a bunch of exotic animals like rhinos and giraffes and red pandas and cheetah and stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, that's quite an experience. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, yeah. I would love to be able to, you know, go out to Australia and just work with not only reptiles, but just wildlife in general and feel qualified to do so. So,
yeah, it was funny because at the zoo, like, cause they get like interns and like volunteers that are local, obviously too. Mm-hmm. Like at the zoo, everyone's like kind of least favorite section is the native section because it's like kangaroos, dingoes, wombats, koalas, things that Australians just know.
Yeah.
But like for us international volunteers, that was like our favorite section. Cause like, we don't get those animals really in zoos in the US. There's like three zoos, I think, that have koalas in the US. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we just got to work with all these cool animals. So like, I would look forward to my native days more than like the hoof stock days. But like every section had its cool animals. Like the red pandas were technically in the host stock section just because of how the zoo laid out, and the red pandas were one of my favorites. I love working with the tree kangaroos. It was a dad, mom, and a baby, and like the dad would wait at the gate for you to walk in, and you have to give him like an avocado slice as like his toll to get in. Otherwise he would attack your boot for like the entire time that you're there. The wombat, she's actually the oldest wombat in captivity. And we would have to distract her at one corner of the enclosure to get her like to feed her while we clean out her bedding, because again, she would just keep attacking our boots. And there was just like a lot of little things. Tasmanian devils were hilarious to watch eat because they're like so loud and just roaring at each other constantly. We had to I got to pet the giraffe and hand feed him on a giant ladder while the keeper like put this stuff on his hooves to keep it from cracking and stuff. And then the aquarium had the reptiles, but like they had I don't want to pick on them, but they had like the basic reptiles. They had a green iguana, a boa constrictor, smaller American alligators, and then a rhino iguana on display. They also had this massive reticulated python, but we weren't allowed to go in there as volunteers. So that was their reptiles that were on display. But in the back room, I guess the guy that ran the reptile, because it was a private zoo, the guy that ran the reptile area, he basically kept his private collection at this zoo. So in the back room, they had things like Fiji iguanas. I don't know if you've ever seen them before. They're a highly endangered, very rare iguana. And I got to hand feed these guys like any day I was in the aquarium section. I got to just pick up shingleback skinks and pet them and stuff fun. They had like all these crazy rare reptiles off behind like the border. And it's crazy to think like they had a corn snake, which is like, oh yeah, corn snakes over here in America, but there like corn snakes are super black market, and it was like the corn snake was actually seized from someone that illegally had it because Australia has such strict export and import laws. They're like, do you want to hold the corn snake to show the kids? And I'm like, can I do the shingleback instead? And they're like, why? Because they get shinglebacks in their gardens, they don't care about shinglebacks.
I remember I saw some in for sale in Canada the other day. I don't know how they got it, but I was like spamming the other Adam with it because he's from Canada, and I was like, get these.
he's gotta be making close to that kind of YouTuber money now. Yeah, right?
Exactly. I was like, this is my only chance to play with them. You need to buy them for me so I can visit one time and see them. You know?
They feel so weird. Shingleback skinks just they don't feel like a living thing.
And I actually like, it's weird to also say that, like, when I saw them, that's how I thought they would feel. I don't know how else to say that, but yeah, I kind of get that vibe.
Yeah, they feel and they look like just a hard plastic toy. So the reptile zoo that I volunteered at on my days off, it was like a thing where people could go and walk through and stuff, but they had a couple open air enclosures, and one of them was, they had this, it was massive. It was like 15 feet by 10 foot blue tongue skink enclosure, and the walls were only a foot high, and people could just reach in and pet the blue tongues. And they had all these different kinds. They had the blotch blue tongues, the northern, the eastern, then they had shinglebacks. So people could just come in And I think it was like $10 to get into the reptiles. Like, people would just come in and just pet blue tongue skinks and shinglebacks like crazy. And I told the workers there, I'm like, yeah, that is like a $10,000 lizard in America. So you guys are just like petting like something that's crazy expensive over by us.
Suddenly one of them goes missing.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna bring this back across the stairs.
Yeah, that's cool though. I mean, you talked about, I believe, interacting with parentes too, and I mean,
not parentes, unfortunately.
Oh, I thought you said them. All right.
No, lace monitors.
Lace. Okay, maybe
the owner of the reptile zoo. He had parentes and a saltwater crocodile, but mm-hmm. he kept all of them at his house because they didn't have the space to have them at the zoo yet. They literally put them in like 6 months after I left. I was so ticked off. But yeah, so I didn't get to pet the parentes. I did see parentes. Mm-hmm. And I did, they had like a 6 foot saltwater crocodile, and now the thing is like 12 foot. But
oh man.
Yeah, so they had some stuff, but no, when I was there, I mostly worked with, they had sand goannas, they had lace monitors, the Australian frilled dragons. They had some adult Boyd's forest dragons. Mm. Couldn't really do much with them because they were very, very flighty.
Yeah.
Yep. They had Merton's water monitors. And cool. Then on my last day, I got to take out, they had like a 15 foot scrub python. So I got to take that out and hold that. And then they had like, you know, all the world's deadliest snakes. Like they had inland taipan and tiger snakes and eastern browns and stuff too.
How many, do you know how many species they had all together?
Roughly. At least 50. They had like every species of carpet python. They had like a bunch of the venomous snakes. They had like, they had at least 50 species of reptiles. That's actually probably underselling it. They probably had even mm-hmm. more than that. Cause they had a bunch of turtles. They had saltwater, freshwater crocs. And then they had two illegally seized boa constrictors.
Man, they get a lot of illegally seized over there.
Oh yeah, after I left, they got a Burmese python, they got an illegally seized scarlet macaw. So they got there's a lot of like weird things getting seized by police over there.
Interesting. When you were there, did you do any like did you try to do any herping stuff? Like were you able to like kind of do any exploring that way?
So where I lived in Canberra, it's Southern Australia. Mm-hmm. And so I was there in the summer, but that was their winter. So all the reptiles were hibernating, but that's that's probably a good thing. Cause in Canberra where I was, the only two native snakes are eastern browns and red-bellied black snakes, which are both deadly. But I did get to go out. And then when we were there, I did go to, our orientation was like up in the tropics. So mm-hmm. we did get to like go and do see some stuff in the wild and everything. And the, where we were right on a giant like river. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't swim in the water because the saltwater crocodiles were so big. So they actually made a man-made beach like half a mile into the town with sand and everything, so people could have the beach experience but like not risk their lives with saltwater crocodiles. Like I would go jogging every morning along the beach and it was completely empty. Nothing was set up along the beach because saltwater crocodiles were rampant in the area, and they mm-hmm. called them, we never saw them, but they called him the beach master. And apparently it was this giant 18 foot male saltwater crocodile that, because when we were there on our third day of orientation, we went out and scuba dived on the Great Barrier Reef. The guy that was running the ship said, yeah, the beach master lives somewhere over there in that den. But yeah, so I did get to see some cool stuff. The when we were up in the tropics, every night it would sound like thunder over us as like probably millions of flying fruit bats would fly from our side to the other side of the river, because that's where they ate over there. Mm-hmm. And like all the trees in the cities had like rainbow lorikeets and little cockatoos and stuff on them. Chirping away and stuff. So it was definitely mm-hmm. a very different experience than here. And then when I went down south, unfortunately, like it was winter, but we did go to like some nature preserves and stuff. I saw emus and kangaroos and stuff in the wild. I laid down right in the middle of a bunch of kangaroos and they didn't even mind because they were probably like, so used to people.
Yeah, it's like I was about to almost say it's like squirrels here, but squirrels don't trust us at all here. So
yeah. No, they're obsessed with squirrels. For some, Australia is obsessed with Australians I work with. No, they don't. No. Like all the people I work with, they're like, oh, you see squirrels, they're so cute. And I'm like, no, squirrels are mean. I would much rather trade that for having a bunch of kangaroos around me.
I don't know. Some kangaroos look so jacked that it's just like,
I wouldn't want to mess with the big reds.
but yeah, it's definitely different. That's kind of so funny, I don't know, to me how it's like so just different, you know, in terms of the native wildlife. And I was like, why would you want a squirrel here? Like,
yeah, like they don't have deer. So they're obsessed with like a lot of people I talk to, they're like, deer are so cute. And I'm like, again, I would trade kangaroos for deer, but, and like they have invasive like red foxes and rabbits and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, most of the wildlife I saw were wild rabbits, wild cockatoos, kangaroos, and then I saw a couple of wild kookaburras and some other things. But yeah, it was a very different experience biking to work every day.
Oh yeah, how far away was it of a bike ride?
6 miles each way. So I was in the best shape of my life after that. I have to imagine.
Oh my god.
Because not only did I get there, but then you're walking around all day because you're a zookeeper. Yeah, so, true. Wow. Yeah, I did a 12-mile bike ride round trip every day.
Yeah, I don't know if I could ever commit to having a job where I have to bike 6 miles every day.
It was something.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome, though. That's all those. I mean, do you have plans? I feel like I already know this answer, but to go back eventually and
see
more of Australia?
At some point, I'd like to go back and actually do touristy things. I did spend like a weekend in Sydney. I spent a weekend on like the beach with like the family that I was staying at, and I got to do some cool things down there. And then I spent that week up in the tropics doing like, that's when I did like the most touristy stuff, like Great Barrier Reef. We did a rainforest tour in like an old like 1940s like military like all-terrain truck thing.
And then they had
like a little touristy zoo up there that you could go to and like pet the kangaroos and stuff like that. So I did like some touristy stuff, but yeah, I'd love to go back and actually like go into the wilderness and see some cool things, and like do like some of the stuff that I actually, because like with interning, I think it was like 4 or 5 days a week stuff, I just didn't have a whole lot of time to do that. And I also didn't have like a whole lot of money, because also flying to Australia is like $2,500. So
yeah, I have to imagine that was not a fun flight either, being on a plane that long.
I actually didn't mind it. That was actually my first time really flying. We went to like Disney World when I was in like fifth grade as a kid, but this was my first time flying since then. Yeah, I actually found it pretty relaxing. I just cozed up, watched some movies and stuff on the trip.
The longest one flight I ever took without like a stop was I think it was from Philly to Las Vegas, and unfortunately we chose Spirit, and we were so cramped and there was a baby crying the whole time, and my girlfriend kept saying, who brings a baby to Las Vegas? And that was the worst flight of my life. So every time I think of traveling long distances in one flight, that's what I feel internally. So I just imagine everybody else suffering.
Yeah, the trip from, because I went out of Newark to LA, that was about 6.5 hours I think, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
That was definitely a smaller, more cramped plane than the 13.5 hour one from LA to Sydney.
Yeah. Well, I have to imagine that if you're going a long flight, you're probably not flying Spirit. Like, you're not flying Spirit from LA to Australia. So that makes a little bit more sense. But that's awesome. I just a couple more questions I just have about, I guess, right now with your business. Is it getting, I know like COVID changed so much stuff. Is it you getting through that? Is it, you know, you make and do, you get in a lot of online stuff?
COVID is a hard thing. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I'm not as in an extreme position as most of the people I know, because like reptiles, they're not exactly expensive compared to like people I know with like fennec foxes and wallabies and like expensive mammals that eat a lot. I've made okay with online programs and stuff, and I like do the odd like in-person small birthday party and stuff. It's starting to pick up a little bit again now that like the vaccine's kind of coming out and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely been a year that like, because I literally quit my day job, what was it, June 2019? So I didn't even make it a full year just doing this until COVID hit.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm all right. Like, I'm pretty fortunate, and I actually know a few educators that permanently shut up shop and like,
yeah, I have to imagine
animals and stuff. So it's it's a very scary time for that kind of thing. But I think the light is at the end of the tunnel. It's still very far away, but it's coming.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you definitely made it this far, you're I don't want to jinx it or nothing, but I can't imagine us. I feel like it's gonna just get better, but. That's great to hear that, you know, you're still getting through it. I know it's just like especially with, like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your business is school stuff. I see you doing whenever you kind of post about doing stuff, or I see someone tagging your business a lot of the time. I see some, you know, schools doing it, and they completely 180'd with online learning, which I guess, you know, I guess probably fits in well with you doing online stuff, because they could just bring in a Zoom call or something.
Yeah.
But I feel like educators are still figuring out what to do, you know?
Yeah. I'm pretty fortunate that, like, what I do, it transfers to online fairly easily. I mean, they don't get, like, the in-person, like, interaction of it, but they still get to see the animals. So relatively, it transfers pretty well to online. It's not like I'm, like, an actor on Broadway or something where I'm just, like, completely shut down. But yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Any plans for the future of the business? Any long-term goals you have set?
So COVID kind of held it up, but I'm planning to get, I want to do at some point, get like an actual animal facility, not just like a reptile building, but like, I want to get a facility, have like a reptile section, a bird section, a mammal section. Cause I do plan to get, like, I know a lot of you guys like do like dream reptile lists and stuff, but like, I have like dream animal lists. Cause like, I want to get all these cool animals to do education programs with. Cause like, I mean, while like croc monitors are really cool, could never feasibly bring one to a child program.
But it might be a
problem. It would not go over well. But yeah, so I have most of all the reptiles I want. Like, I got my diamond python, my Eastern snake, like white-lit python, my rock iguana. Like, I have reptiles that I've always wanted and do well for education, but I'd love to get like a wallaby, an African porcupine, like kinkajou, coati, these things. So I do eventually, I'm hoping, and again, it got postponed because of COVID, but eventually I want to get like an actual animal facility where instead of like having like a reptile room in my house or something like that, like I can have all the animals in this facility, have different sections and stuff, so the reptiles are separate from the birds and things like that. So that's definitely like 5-year long-term plan. And it was on track before COVID, so hopefully once this kind of remedies itself, I'll get back onto that track. But yeah, so that's kind of the long-term goal for me, at least right now. And then obviously just kind of like the YouTube channel and things like that.
Yeah.
Doing what programs I can.
Yeah. Awesome. I can't imagine what the licensing would be like for some stuff. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I don't know. I mean, is that difficult to get some of those?
No, not really. Most of them, you'd be surprised.
I guess if, you know, the Tiger King exists, then.
If I wanted that kind of animal. But no, for most of the mammals I want, you just need a USDA Class C exhibitor license. And I've already had that for 3 years.
I needed it
for my hedgehogs and chinchillas. So I'm good for everything up through kangaroos, basically. As long as it can't kill me and it's not huge, I basically can have it.
I don't know. Sometimes those hedgehogs, they look at you a weird way. You know?
Yeah. they definitely hurt. They definitely hurt more than most of the reptiles.
All right. Awesome. I kind of feel you on the, I mean, I've always been a person too, who like, I feel like it would be very easy with, you know, your business and keeping the animals, you know, at home. It's hard to separate like relaxed time from work time. And I've always kind of been someone who, you know, like people are, well, kind of the one upside I feel like a lot of people are feeling from COVID is they're being like, hey, I can do my job from home. And I'm terrible at working from home. It's so easy just to hop on a video game and not pay attention. And
I feel that.
I need like a separate place of work where I just can't be tempted. So I don't know if you're like that. If you had a facility that would kind of give you that little bit of separation.
Yeah, I mean, for the long, literally until a couple months ago, I've always had animals in my room. When I came back, my tegu was in my bedroom. I had, my closet wasn't full of clothes. I had snake racks and stuff in my room. I had like 30 reptiles crammed in my bedroom at some point. And then once I built the reptile room, I moved those all out. And then the mammals came in. So my room was full of bunnies, hedgehogs, and chinchillas. So this is the first time since I graduated college where my room is my own now. But yeah, I'll be working when you have all of your animals and stuff at home and it's kind of like your job and you have as many animals as I do. Like some nights I'll be like, okay, it's 7 p.m. I'm good. Whereas other nights I'll be like doing water bowl changes and stuff at like 10 p.m. while I'm like watching a Twitch stream or something at night.
There's so many times where, like, you know, I'm doing exactly what you're talking about, water bowl changes, and it's like 10 p.m. And then I forget I have my timer shut off at 10 p.m. Like,
yeah.
darn it, I need to turn this back on. And then I have this one in an obscure corner where it doesn't pick it up sometimes. So I have to squeeze my body in there to try to turn it back on. And it's just like this whole thing. And I'm like, this just never ends.
Yeah. Oh God. So many times where I'll be doing water bowl changes. I'm like, all right, now I'm going to feed the monitor lizards and the lights go off. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just leave the food in there. They'll get it.
Yeah. It's quite a life. All right. Awesome though. That a lot of cool stories. And I mean, that Australia trip really sounds like quite an interesting thing and quite an experience. I've been really wanting to, once obviously I have more money and things a little bit better traveling wise, so like I want to kind of do a little thing myself where I get to kind of go out and, you know, I don't know if it'd be like Australia or going to something like a Costa Rica or something, but kind of just experiencing nature and seeing some probably reptiles, but just animals in general. I don't really, you know, get to see, I mean, I don't know, Northeast is not really that, you don't get to see a diverse amount of reptiles running around. What? You know what I mean?
What? John, are you saying you can't make a lot of content looking up garter snakes in the wild?
Probably not. I mean, granted, if I don't know if you ever watched the Jersey Herpers videos, but he does a lot of herping in Jersey and he makes plenty of content out there doing that stuff, but it's definitely not as diverse as something like Australia or something I would love to go see and I don't know, experience. So
yeah, you'll probably get a lot more clicks picking up a wild shingleback than you will picking up like an Eastern newt or whatever they're called.
Yeah, heck, I don't even need to record it. I just need a picture with it to say it happened. And then I'll probably be in, there's this new Facebook group. I guess it doesn't matter, but I got invited to, and instead of, you know, how Facebook doesn't let you do animal sales or anything, they call it evictions. So when something's on sale, they say, this guy's up for eviction.
That's clever. Yeah.
And I feel like I could just take a picture with a shingle back over there and be like, PM up for eviction. Cover smuggling fees.
Yeah, seriously. Potential 50 years in prison or whatever the punishment is.
Must be able to buy me a good lawyer.
Yeah, jeez.
All right. I appreciate your time, man, and coming on and talking. Good conversation.
Yeah, no worries.
Yep. So let's wrap it up. Again, thanks, Adam, for coming on. You can see more, I guess. What are you, Uncharted Wild on all your socials?
Yeah. So okay. Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, Uncharted Wild.
Okay. Yeah, I always got to ask that because I don't, all mine are different. I screwed up. So I don't know if people made that same stupid mistake that I made, but just want to clarify. So awesome. Yeah, check them out on there, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, you said. And how many times are you uploading?
So I upload on YouTube every Thursday.
Every Thursday. So once a week. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just usually just see a video and click, so I don't usually track, but yeah, some good content, a lot of cool animals, good presentation style. Actually, I think I said this to you when you were in my live stream one time, but the how I did the reptile room tour, I was like, you know, I always like how Adam takes his animals out and does it in this cool presentation on a table. And I was like, I'm gonna do that. You know, this is the closest I'm going to get to be able to be a reptile educator where I talk to an audience. So, I might as well take my one shot at it. So,
yeah, I saw your live stream and then I clicked on a video of Wiccans and I saw him doing the white table thing. I'm like, wait, is everyone stealing my thing?
No,
I'm just kidding.
No, I definitely could not. I don't have that presence ability you have, but I did want to just put myself, I was just like, before I even recorded, I was like, I am Adam. I'm one with Adam. I am presenting to an audience. I have 500 people watch me. And I just start waving like the Queen of England, you know, the quick
there you go.
Little, yeah. Yeah, there you go. So
yeah, you got to wave your hands around a lot. You got to move your head a lot. Yeah, it's definitely how I do it is definitely easier than how you do it with moving around cage to cage. That just sounds
exhausting. Honestly, I kind of felt like I was like, I don't know. I got that a little bit. I was like, you know, I do a lot of moving around and stuff like that. And I was like, I'm going to bring it to me because I'm tired of like moving around everywhere and making it 10 times more complicated. Then I have my girlfriend film and she's like, no, I don't want to do it today.
See, that's the hard thing. I don't have anyone to film. Like, I did a reptile, I did a reptile room mini tour, like back over the summer or something. And like, that took me so long to film. And that was only like 20 of my like 70 animals. I'm like, people keep asking me for a reptile room tour. And I'm like, guys, I don't know if that's ever happening.
It's like, do you have a tire day? Like, what are you doing Sunday?
Yeah, I'm like, I like sitting and taking the animals out. I don't like moving around, showing all the, like, it's so much easier.
No, it is. I agree. All right. Awesome, man. Thanks for coming on again. And for you listening, definitely check Adam out, Uncharted Wild. And thanks for listening to the podcast. And we'll see you next week.
Like and subscribe.
That's not this type of thing. I don't know what it's all called. I don't even know if you could follow. I don't even know what it is. So
I know nothing about podcasts. So
I usually just say whatever you need to do to see when a new thing is posted, you click that. That's what you do. That's usually how I go about it. So
yeah, I got
do that. There you go. All right. Thanks, everyone.